struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm here today with Tony Lynch, founder of Memories of Us Limited. What's going on, Tony? How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, my friend. How are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing fabulous. The sun is shining somewhere behind the clouds, I'm assuming. I'm on the right side of the dirt. Second podcast interview of the day. Ready to go. Let's do it.
Let's do it, brother. And thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you're the founder of Memories of Us and the Memories of Us podcast. Why don't you give the folks listening a little bit of background about what that is and why you started?
Memories of Us is we're a nonprofit that's based around giving grief support to men. And the podcast is based around men having those genuine conversations about what we actually go through when we experience loss. And it was a way to try to help other men understand that they wasn't by themselves. And it's kind of, you know, you have to kind of go through things in order to be able to talk about it. And I based everything that I built around my nonprofit about what I've gone through. I've lost almost everyone in my life. I'll just start with the hardest one, which was my son. He passed away 5 years ago at the age of 8 years old. My mother passed away 2 years after that from a stroke. My father passed away almost 10 years ago. My younger brother passed away 3 months after him due to a massive heart attack. I've watched all of my grandmothers pass away, my grandfathers, and countless friends. I've gone through some really challenging moments dealing with loss. Things I didn't understand because I was never taught these things. You know, I was never taught that it was okay to grieve or cry or, you know, I was always taught, you know, men don't do this, right? And it almost had a very, you know, tragic end. It really did. I almost had a very tragic end trying to hold all of these things in for years and years out of my life and trying to navigate through life alone. That's, you know, and having no one to really guide me. So I was the young kid that had a chip on my shoulder. I was always angry, you know, and I look back on it now. It was because I learned how to protect myself against people. That's the foundation of Memories of Us. And what it really means is, or what it really stands for, men don't carry pictures around with us, right? That's something, you know, and I hate to say it, but that's something that females do. Females love to pull out pictures. Yeah, this is such and such, you know, they're always looking at pictures. Men don't do that. It's a protective mode that we go into where, you know, if we carry around pictures and start talking about it, we always have a judgmental mind of someone else judging us, calling us weak or, you know, whatever, you know? And so that's a subconscious mind. So we keep everything up here. And it's a way for men to protect ourselves. If you don't see it, you can't hurt me. So we find ourselves lost in thought. And that's what Memories of Us is all about. It's about having those memories, holding on to them, and finding the beautiful parts in it to be able to help navigate through that world of grief.
I really like that. I know that as men, a lot of us are considered more stoic than other people. And one of those reasons is we process a lot of it internally. And I know a lot of guys in my circle and a lot of, you know, other couples, and they're like, he just doesn't have any emotions. And I said, no, that's not true at all. We have the full range and full spectrum of emotions, just like everyone else does. We don't always express them the same way, right? The reason that actors get paid is because their expressions are aligned with the emotions they're supposed to be feeling. That's why they get paid so well. When you go to a crappy movie, most of the time it's not the story, it's the actor not being in full alignment with how the face is supposed to react with versus how the person is supposed to be feeling. But here's the deal. Everyone experiences emotions differently. I just got done reading a fantastic book called Talking with Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell. And he goes through this phenomenon and he covers all sorts of, I mean, it goes really in depth, all these different scenarios. Basically what it boils down to is if your expressions match the classical view of how you're feeling, everyone understands. It's transparent, straightforward. People understand. But if your facial expression or your reaction does not align with the feeling, no one has any clue exactly what it is you're feeling or how you're processing it. So what does this look like? This means judges that want to see you and see if you're experiencing remorse, if your facial expressions are not aligned with the emotion, they have no better than a coin flip's chance of understanding if you are or are not guilty. Same way with a police officer, the same way with the CIA, DIA, and FBI. We had all these double agents in the 60s and 70s dealing with communism, but they didn't express the feelings based on how they're doing. So it's no better than a coin flip's chance of understanding who they are or what they're feeling. And a lot of men don't really express, especially on their face, the emotions that they're feeling. So we're considered a lot of times emotionless. We're going through the exact same problem that everyone else is. We're processing it in different ways. And a lot of times our expressions just aren't in alignment with the emotion that we're feeling based on the classical thought of what an emotion might be considered as a facial expression. So it's really hard to tell just in general what people are experiencing, because when people are shocked, it's not the wide-eyed surprise face like you see in the movies. It might just be like the eye flare and be like, I don't know what's happening. Just the eye flare and like, what is going on? It is not necessarily the same. Or some people just have no expression when that happens. And inside their head, they're like, what on earth is that? How am I supposed to react to this? And it just takes time to catch up. People are like, aren't you surprised? Or the wife comes down in a gorgeous dress looking amazing for the evening, but you don't process it externally the way they would prefer. So like, you didn't even notice. Untrue, but my face didn't match up with how I felt. So then they get offended. It is very interesting to see how that plays out. And I'm glad that you have an organization with Memories of Us, Tony, that really helps men walk through and process those things.
One thing I want to add to what you're saying, and that's great stuff, but you know, the main thing is the way that we're raised. You know, so you want to talk about that blank stare and everything like that. Most men that grow up in households, you know, right around our ages and stuff like that, we got our butts whipped, right? We got a butt whipped from crying. So, you know, like, but when you start peeling back all of these things, you know, all of these factors come into it, but then you got to go to the foundation of it as well. How was you raised? Who taught you this? You know, and it's usually the people, you know, like your parents, your grandparents, your uncles, your aunties, right? These are the people that you look up to that are the same ones that whip your butt and tell you not to cry. Or, you know, my mom's favorite one that she used to give me was, keep crying, I'm gonna give you something to cry for. Hold on, but you just did. And when you're going through that at a young age, you have to look at how it carries over into your teenage years and your adult years, right? Because nothing really changes. You've already been groomed. You've already been taught that, hey, this is a no-no. You can't cry. So your first heartbreak, you want to break down and everything else. What's the first thing men do? Man, I'm gonna show her. I'm going to go out there and I'm gonna sleep with five females just to show her, right? And the whole time it becomes self-destructive. And it's that whole, you know, when females look and go, are you even feeling anything? And you go, wait, yeah. Well, you just seem like you're cold-hearted. It may seem that way, but no, it's not that way. You got to remember, well, I've been groomed not to feel these emotions. They don't exist to me. They do, but subconsciously, they don't, right? So that whole look of shock when something happens, you kind of go, right? And other people will look at that and go, did you not see what just happened? Yeah, I saw everything that happened. You're not, you know, the least bit bothered about it. No, that's not true. I really am bothered about it. I just don't know how to express that emotion. You know, when we lose someone, right? Lose someone close to us and things like that, is usually that whole grooming comes back. You look at it because you're looking at every man in the room when that happens. And you're looking to see what they're doing. And the crazy part about it is that they're looking at you to see what you're doing. And so now it becomes this, I have to be stronger than the next person because I can't show weakness. I can't be vulnerable and things like that, you know? And with Memories of Us, we provide that space. And the beautiful part about it is that these men come in there. It takes them a little bit to get warmed up. But once they get warmed up, man, the conversations go. It's a beautiful thing. I've seen men cry. I've seen some of the biggest, burliest men, you know, biker dudes sitting there and just bawl their eyes out. And I'm going, now that's what it's all about. That's exactly what it's all about. And these men walk out of there, they're better, right? They want to talk about what's going on. They're not afraid to go, I'm not okay today, but that's okay. And then you have other men that look at you and go, you know what? If you need me, I'm here. You know, pick up the phone and call. You want to meet up and go fishing somewhere? So it's more than just the support aspect of it, right? It's a brotherhood. It's a community of men who have stepped outside of the norm and decided and actually figured out that, hey, you can't do this alone. So to be just a small fraction of their journey is humbling to me, right? Because I can only speak from my perspective. I know what I went through. And my purpose behind it was I didn't want the next man to go through what I went through by themselves. I know what it's like to have to walk that walk. You know, grief is a very lonely, lonely walk, man, because when all the smoke settles and, you know, everybody goes home, you're still there. And that's the hardest part. And I wanted to go, I told myself, I wonder what would happen if someone was there to help support you and walk with you and help with the tools that we have to give and go, this is what I have to give you. It's yours to do with what as you choose to. And most of the men would take these tools and they would look at it and go, I can use this here. Right now I'm going through this part, you know, and I know such and such did it this way, but I'm going to take those same tools and I'm going to do it just a little bit different that works for you, because that's what it's all about. What works for me may not work for you, but these tools are universal. Take them and use them. And the men are there. They're there, man. They're like, hey, you know, we probably need to talk. So there's a lot of talks that go on outside of the groups. They don't need to tell me everything, right? But I've heard the conversations, you know. And then you have to look at the grieving process when it comes down to men as well, right? Or, you know, when they're dealing with trauma or that whole blank face look, as most women like to call it, you're just cold-hearted. This is not true. You ever thought this is what grief looks like to a man? It looks totally different from what you're going through, correct? Yeah. Why? Because you was taught to talk. I was taught to fight. So I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out, get out of the fight so I can start to heal. And once you give up, once you can surrender to the process, you realize that the fight isn't about you. It's about your emotions trying to come out. And sometimes you just got to fall in love with the process. It's going to change you. That's no doubt. It's going to change you, but you have a choice of how it changes you. And I love seeing men choose the route of, I'm not going to be bitter about this anymore. I'm going to be better, right? And I want to take these things and I want to teach my son that it's okay to do this. So we're changing the conversations. We change the conversations that men have with their women, their significant other, you know? They come home and the men may be going through a rough patch. The women knows, you know, now they're starting to catch on to it. And the woman will actually go, you know what? If you need to talk, I'm here. And men will actually find some time, make time to sit down and talk to their significant other, because they want them to be aware of what's going on with them.
Oh, absolutely. I love what you said in there. You talked about development and grooming. You talked about the tools that we need. You know, we're just really beginning to understand exactly what the environment has to do with how we're groomed and how we're trained. There's been a lot of studies coming out in the last few years, one by Johns Hopkins, where they talk about how do we prevent teens from going through all these problems? You know, where, at what point do you interject in a child's life in order to make the real difference? What they're discovering is that from birth to 7 years of age, we don't really have a filter. Whatever happens in our world, we're onboarding that and we're creating our own personal operating system, our set of beliefs, morals, mm-hmm. values, how we react and respond to different things. And the things that we're taught at that young age, that's how our basic operating system is created. And until we get some kind of major input or do some serious rework inside of us, that's what we're operating on. So they're like, you know, can we interject with DARE in middle school, and that's going to keep them from getting into drugs in high school? They found out the answer is no. They can't interject at 17, 16, 15, 14, 13. It got all the way down to essentially K through two, which is by the time that you're seven, that you can actually have that measurable, no kidding. This is, we're laying the programming down on your being. So that's how you're going to operate moving forward. The only measurable the impact they ever had was K through two. Everyone else has to really understand and go through their own personal process of discovery and through that journey to really figure out who they are as a person, how they got that way, and how they want to change moving forward. So very interesting. That's why we end up with a lot of adults that don't know how to do certain things. They don't know how to process certain things. We get to this place where we think that expressing emotion somehow makes us strong or makes us weak. And expressing and working through emotion is something that everyone has to do. And it has nothing to do with your strength or your weakness. They're not correlated. Although many men have been taught that over time, that if you experience or express emotion, that it does mean that you're not strong. It means that you are weak, which is not true. We're finding this out more and more and more. But I love that you mentioned that we have these groups and you walk the men through this journey. And what you're really doing is creating a set of tools that they can use and apply in other situations and then teach other men how to employ. Because if we don't have the right tools in the toolbox, you can't really fix whatever's going on. You might get away, right? You might get away with taking out a screwdriver and using it as a hammer a couple of times. You might get away with it, but eventually you're going to hit it. And the handle's going to break. And now not only do you not have a hammer, you don't have a working screwdriver as well. So using the wrong tool for the wrong situation might work just a little bit, but not a good solution long-term. When I talk to my children and we talk about different things and they're like, oh, just go grab this, grab the pliers, grab this. Like, I was like, which tool do I have that is actually the right tool for this job? And we go and we look at it, we work through it. And they're like, oh, this tool is much easier. Yep. That's exactly what it was designed for. Same thing with, you know, the house rules, like sitting on the armrest of a couch or the back of the sofa. It's like, was that designed to hold your butt? And they're like, right. No, like, what part of the couch was designed to hold your butt? Oh, the cushions. Oh, well, how about you put it there? And they're like, it's much comfortable anyway. Yeah, exactly. Like, what was it? And we were designed as people. We were designed to process emotions. We haven't been taught how to a lot of the time, especially men, but we're designed to do those. There's nothing wrong with anger. Anger as a concept, nothing wrong with it. How you employ and express yourself through that anger, depending on what you do, is going to imagine where you fall out in society. If you take that anger and you use it in the gym only, you're going to have stress relief. You're going to use that to build your body and build yourself. You're going to clear your mind. And that's fantastic. If you use your anger to express that on your family through your fists, that is not an acceptable use of anger. You've used that internal motivation to tear down other people instead of build yourself up. So the anger itself is not a problem. It's how we employ it. That's the problem.
Right. And I love that you said that, because there's also another part to that anger, right? You know, and I'm all about lifting weights, you know, anytime. I love lifting weights, man. Like, I've always, you know, been a fan of bodybuilding, right? I've been a fan of putting on muscle. I just wanted to get big. And I was, that's what I do. That's why I became a personal trainer. I enjoy doing this. That's one of my passions that I have. I love helping other people reach their fitness goals as well. Now, when we talk about the anger, a lot of my anger was taken out in the gym, you know, and I had my own personal gym. So it wasn't nothing for me. I can lift as much as I want. I could just go beast mode if I want to, you know, just all out. But what I found out later on is that the anger was still there. I never really addressed the source of the anger. I had an outlet for it, but it was still there, you know? So it, on top of everything else, it just added to every time I went into there, I always had that there. And if something else happened that made me angry, I could add that to it, right? It wasn't until, you know, I injured my shoulder. I had some small tears in my shoulder, so I had to stop for a little bit. Now, when your passion is something like this and you feel that it's a stress relief and everything like that, and now you don't have it, well, now you got to go back and you have to deal with this. And that's what kept happening. I had go back and I was going, I'm still angry. Even I don't have this anymore. You know, I can't do it right now. I got to let myself heal up. And the anger will pop up and go, hey, you know what? Remember this right here? I go, yeah. And I get angry, right? Because now those old things are starting to come up. And I went, something's not right here. I should not be this angry. My life is not good, but it's not bad. I'm not in a bad place. But then I realized it was a lie. I was in a bad place because I realized that I was in a relationship and I'm one of those guys. I'm very, very simple in a relationship. You know, you treat me good, I treat you good. I would give you the world and my loyalty as long as it's reciprocated. What ended up happening was that it was being reciprocated and I stopped and I started looking for red flags. I'm starting to look for those triggers to make me angry. Let's think about this for a minute. I'm just going, hold on, man. I'm about to ruin another relationship. And by the time I realized, I had already ruined it. The anger started coming out because I started noticing red flags or my own proverbial red flags with this individual that had nothing to do with the last individual. But it was the similarities. So I concocted these things in my mind. I became angry. I went, you know what? This is not going to work. I'd rather be alone than to go through this again. And I realized how much I created in that anger ball. And I went, gosh darn it. It's not them, it's me. It is not them, it's me. I'm going to have to figure this out. Why am I so angry? So that usually stems from trauma, right? It usually stems from years and years of built up trauma. That's where a person becomes, that's where the anger comes from. But then it's all the different things that come along with it. You know, now when we want to break down anger, what does anger look like? It looks like addiction. It looks like thoughts of suicide. It looks like homelessness. It's like being reckless with your money and your life. That's, which is kind of similar when we talk about the grieving process. This is part of it. So now we look at the misunderstanding, right? What does it look like? This is what your anger looks like. Now, you said something real interesting before, earlier, where you talked about how we was created to carry these, you know, these things. Well, we are equipped with these emotions. You know, it's funny how we're created. We was created very, very uniquely. We have these emotions, right? Our bodies are designed to move the emotions through. So when you get into, let's say, a really funny comedy act, or something, right? Where do you feel your laughter come from? That comes from inside. It's a certain amount of vibration that sends these feel good and go, hey, that was funny. It's the same thing, right? When you experience trauma or loss, those same things come through your body. We have these cells in our body that vibrates. And the crazy part about it is that we're designed to move it through our body. Grief is something that can't sit in your body. It will make you sick. The longer it sits there, let's think about the ailments that come along with the anger and things like that that happens to the body. You have heart disease, you have kidney disease, your blood pressure is up, you're always tired, you're always fatigued, all of these different factors that go into it. Well, where did that come from? It comes from your anger. It's trapped inside of your body. You have to move that through. But again, people don't get to that point because they look at it and go, I'm not going to express myself that way. Why not? Well, that's you being a girl. I'm not going to do that. But I go, what if you was wrong? And so what I've started doing, and there was something that I put together in one of my groups, I started putting together a music list. And it was something that I learned from reading about African traditions, right? And the grieving process, it's always fascinated me. It fascinates me more now because I want to understand more about it. You know, I want to build this relationship with it so I'm able to do better at what I do. And Africans or Westerners always say, you Easterners don't know how to grieve. What do you mean? He goes, you guys are grieving all wrong. What do you mean we grieving all wrong? They'd be like, you don't grieve. I was like, well, you got us there. So it was like, okay, you got us there, man. We don't, right? You know, we take all of these things and you compile it and then you stretch it out. Now you can get rid of all the things that don't matter, get down to the source of what you're feeling. And then you can begin to allow yourself to move it through, but also allow yourself to go through these emotions. you can allow yourself, you can give yourself permission to go, you know what? I feel like crying right now. Why? Because I have this memory that, and I miss this person, or, you know, I have this memory of something that happened to me, and your body automatically knows what to do, knows what to do, right? So we throw some music and whenever you're going through something bad, right? And let the music move. You find yourself dancing around the house in the kitchen. No one knows why. And guess what? It's part of the process. You're going to have to let yourself do that. This is how we're created. We're created with rhythm. We're created with these cells that vibrate, right? And it's hitting the right frequency on each and every last one of them. And grief has its own set of frequencies, right? Our own frequency. So when you hit it, it moves. If it doesn't have anywhere to go, it just bounces around your body. It don't know what to do. You're not sweating. You're not screaming. You're not doing any of the things that your body is telling you to do. You have to give yourself permission. And then we can start tearing apart the anger. Why are you this way? Because it's going to open up your mind. It's going to free up space to learn about where all of these emotions are coming from, especially if you're not familiar with them. Anger is one of those ones that I find that men adapt to a lot quicker than anything else, because it's easier to be angry than it is to say, I'm hurt. It's easier to blame someone for your anger, right? Because when you're angry at someone, the first thing you do, it doesn't matter if you was the source of the problem, you're angry. It's all this person's problem. We attach ourselves to it, right? Even if we're right or wrong. And it spools out, man. It spools out in so many different ways. And sometimes you just have to take a step back. If a person is self-aware of, if you're a nice person and you only have little spurts of anger, you still have something to deal with. And again, you have to start to go back. Why am I so angry?
Yeah, you really have to take this journey through yourself and discover what it is. I talk to a lot of women on different topics. I grew up with a mom, a sister, and a grandma, and really only communicated with them for the vast majority of the first part of my life. So I really find it easy to connect and talk to women quite a bit. One of the interesting things I found is the different ways that we interact and different way we process things. Men are in theory, or in general, generally speaking, very direct. Like, and women are generally very suggestive. Now, of course, that's not everybody. Don't get all upset with me here, listeners. I know I'm talking about everybody here, but you know, my wife will communicate with me and she'll say like, you know, hey, if you get a second, you know, the dishes are kind of piling up. Nowhere in there did she say, do the dishes. So a lot of guys will misinterpret that and says, well, it sounds like it sucks that the dishes are piling up, and then we'll go about our day and not do anything. Guys, on the other hand, be like, hey man, I need you to do the dishes before you head out to work. Okay. Direct. I understand that. He said, do the dishes before work. I can make that happen. But a lot of ladies feel like they're being mean if they're being direct. And it creates this mismatch of communication between the sexes that unless someone sits there and explains that to you, you don't understand why that matters. Why being direct matters. Like if I've got a problem with Tony, I'll be like, Tony, WTF, man. And be like, oh, sorry, I was worried about something else. I was a little rude to you. I didn't mean to take that on you. And it's over. And we've solved it. Ladies, on the other hand, think it's mean to be direct or not nice, which is apparently the worst thing ever. So someone at work will do something to them, something innocuous. And instead of being direct, they'll go home and be like, I don't understand why this is happening. They're so upsetting. They're not doing this thing, this, that, and the other. I'm like, well, did you ask them? Because, I mean, most people, generally speaking, aren't just walking around just being jerks to each other intentionally. Like, you know what, Tony, when I see Tony later, I am going to be a jerk. Like, most people don't say that, especially to Tony, right? I was like, did you talk to this person at work? And they're like, she's like, well, you know, I don't really want to, you know, address it and create a problem. I was like, here's the deal. This person likely has no earthly idea that they've created a problem with you. You're the only one experiencing it. They're not experiencing it. That's probably just how they normally operate. And they have no clue in the world that you're bothered by this in the slightest. And it's like, what do you mean? Like, go talk to them. Be like, hey, you know, when you do this thing, like it really kind of, you know, bothers me. And likely what will happen is, oh, I had no idea that it was like a sensitive topic or what, like no clue. And just bringing it up, likely not really even addressing, just talking about what the thing is that happened It's likely fixed. Men will do that and be like, what the heck, Tony? Oh, sorry, man. Like, dealing with some stuff at home, not my normal cordial self. But ladies will just take it home with them. They'll tell everyone about it except for the person. All right. And none of the other people can help them except for or listen and allow them to give the report. But the only person that can help them is the person they don't want to be direct with because they think it's mean, rude, or they're hurting their feelings. So having that expectation, understanding what that means and what that looks like, that matters. Expectations matter. That communication matters. Communications and expectation are the two things that make me more upset about anything else. They're misaligned. I've got one more thing to say before I'm going to kick it back to you. Like, just take driving in traffic, for instance. I assume that everyone sucks at driving. That's my assumption. I assume that everyone is on the road is going to be crazy. They're not going to signal. They're going to cut me off. They're going to stop short. They're going to honk their horns. They're going to flip me the bird. That's my expectation. So when it happens, I'm like, oh, yeah, I knew that was coming. Oh, I wonder what's going on. Are they in a hurry? I hope everyone's all right. And it allows me to have that perspective. There's other people out there I hear, and I don't know this for sure. Maybe you can back me up. They assume everyone's a good driver. So when they get cut off, they get personally offended. Like, I cannot believe that person cut me off. And the expectation they set, just driving to work, will let them know if they're going to get upset or not. They've decided even ahead of time before the thing happens, they're going to get upset. And I'm like, you expect people to be good drivers? They're like, yeah, you know, we went through training. We got a certification. I was like, do you ever make a mistake? Do you ever forget to signal, look up from your phone, stop short, whatever the things that happen? Like, oh yeah. When it's them, complete forgiveness and grace. Oh, my bad. I'm so sorry. But when it happens to them, I can't believe it. How could you dare? How could you possibly? That expectation that we set, when we set that intention, like, I didn't know what I was going to talk about with Tony today. I hadn't looked at my notes, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to show up. I'm going to be in a good mood. I'm going to provide some value. I'm going to listen to Tony. And that's what I'm intending to do. And everything's gone great. But because I set that intention, because I know what my expectations are of myself and the interaction, I understand that and I'm able to show and flow through that.
Yeah. Let's see. I love that you brought up the fact of the communication factor between men and women, because I've been guilty of this, right? So that's the only reason I could talk about it. I've been guilty of that. Yeah. Every man has been, and I can honestly say I didn't understand. I really didn't, like you said, men are more blunt about things. Like, if I need something done, hey, I would come to Travis, like, hey, Travis, you mind grabbing that over there for me, real quick while I go over here and grab this, real simple communication. I found that the hardest work I ever done was trying to be in a relationship. This is why I'm single now. Right. And I suck at this. I really suck at this because I don't understand the language. I don't understand what's so hard to say what's on your mind. But then again, I'm a man and we're talking about women. Now, I have met women that are very direct and it's something about it. I just go, okay, at least I know what's on your mind. At least I know we got the whole communication down. Now, the relationships I've had, like I said before, I've had many relationships that just never worked out, but I realized it was me and not them. That's one of those things where you have to sit back and go, my gosh, this is all she was asking? I'm like, yeah. Hey, dummy, do you get it now? And I went, no, I really don't. And this is me having myself talk like, hey, I just don't. Why is it so hard? And I was never taught that, right? I was never taught the way women talk and, how they communicate and all of these things. But it's something that's been passed down through ages, from all women, what it seems like. And it's like, okay, instead of saying, hey, those dishes are piling up, just like you said before, wouldn't it be so much easier to say, hey, babe, can you get the dishes today? Like you said, I know that. But when you say that, if you got kids, I'm looking at the kids like, y'all hear your mama? She ain't talking to me. She talking to y'all. I'm quick to pass that off. Like, she talking to y'all, Or, if it's just me and her or something like that, and she says it, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to get done. And I'm going to get in trouble for it. because that's when they come back and that's when the bluntness come out because now they're angry. I thought I asked you to do the dishes. I'm like, no, you said the dishes was piling up. There's a difference. Well, this is what I meant to say. Okay. Communicate with me a little bit better. Right. Then, you know, I mess around, get throw punched and all that stuff. It's just not a good scene.
The one that got me was I'm leaving for work and like, hey, babe, we're getting low on milk. And in my mind, I'm like, well, that sucks. I got to go to work. Right. And what guys, this is for you. I women, you're not even going to hear me right now. This is just for that. When she says we're getting low on milk, that means take yourself to the store and bring home milk. That's what that means. I'm learning it for you. I'm using my power of deduction and I'm sharing that with you today, man. We're getting low on milk means go get the milk. And ladies, right now, you're confused at why I'm saying this. We don't understand. We want to be your partner. If you tell us what you want directly, we can do it.
Yeah.
If you suggest, like my wife talks to my son, she's like, hey, if you want, we're going to run to the store. You want to come along? And he's no, why would a 13-year-old boy ever want to go to the store? Hashtag never. It doesn't matter who it's with or what, you know, whatever. I walk in there and said, hey, we're going to the store. Let's go. He jumps up and we go. And she's like, how does that work that he does it when you say it, but he doesn't do what I say? You said that if he felt like it, he could come along. Guess what, babe? He will never, ever, ever in a million years ever feel like going to the store with you ever for any reason at any time. Because why would we want to go to the store? You take him to the hardware store? You taking him to the drag races? Like, where are you taking him? Oh, you're taking him grocery shopping? He's hashtag not interested. Like, why?
Well,
if you just tell him.
Think about it. We learn lessons about going shopping with women, right? How many times have you sat outside of a store holding bags and a coat, sitting over on the benches with the other guys? Because yeah, we don't know why we're there.
I have no idea.
We honestly
to spend
don't
time
know.
With them. Yeah, spend time with them, apparently.
Yeah, but you know, it's a way that we spend time together. And don't get me wrong, you know, I don't mind going to the store to go shopping, you know, but I'm very quick. I don't linger around. I don't need to try on the pants.
I don't go to the store unless I know what I'm getting before I go in there.
Exactly.
Women go to Target and be like, I just let Target tell me what I need.
That's one hell of a conversation that they're having with Target, man. let's be honest about that. You know, when you can sit in Target for 2 hours and get two outfits, what was Target saying to you? You know, I mean, I can go to like my thing is fishing, right? And wait. So you can't put me in a store like that. That'd be the only time where I would have to tell my woman, hey, you might want to stay home on this one.
Yeah,
I'm about to go get lost, right? So, yeah, I mean, and I'm guilty of it, man. I will go just like women like shoes and clothes and things like that. You put me inside of a sporting goods store, like Sportsman's. I'm looking at the fishing rods. I'm casting. I'm reeling it in. You know, I'm doing all of these things. I'm checking out tackle boxes. What's the new one? I'm looking at lures and different baits. I'm in there for hours. I know everyone in the store by the time I leave, you know, what's this over here? Yeah. You know, so I kind of understand it a little bit where that frustration comes from. And, you know, at another place, if you put me in a store that has weights, oh, I got to touch all the weights. I got to put it on a bar to try to lift it up because I'm taking it home with me, but I'm doing a test run in the store. You know, it's get lost in there. But you put me in a grocery store or a clothing store, I'm going, I need two pairs of pants. I need a pack of socks. I need some underwear. I need some t-shirts. That's all I need. Boom, boom, boom. I got everything lined up. I'm out. Now you put me in there.
11 minutes, start to finish. 11 minutes.
Yeah, 11 minutes. I'm in and out, right? I'm like Sasquatch, you know? I'm like Sasquatch. What was that? He yeah, does exist. Yeah. Pew, pew, I'm out again, you know? But it's, you know, you put me in there. If I have to go shopping with a woman, I'm going to complain. I'm going to huff and puff because I didn't intend on spending 2 hours of my day in the store with you. I had maybe 15 minutes max, right? And then I was going to be off doing something else. And well, I may not have nothing else to do, but I wasn't trying to be in a store. And I had to look at it and I go, now I get it, right? I get it. That whole communication thing. Hey, we're going to go to the store. I need to pick out a couple outfits. That means, hey, don't have any other plans the rest of the day.
Yeah, guys, take notes. I want to go grab a couple of outfits means you getting dinner on the way home at 9 o'clock at night. That's what that means.
Exactly. And you might want to compliment her on the outfits that she have. See, that's what most men make that mistake too, because we're so frustrated. We're going, I can't believe we just spent 6 hours at the store. It's nighttime. Like the whole day is gone. And she's over there looking at you like, yeah, well, what's no different from when you went to the sports store? Was it, Tony? I'm like, oh, man.
The difference is you wanted to go to the sports store and you didn't want to go to the clothes store.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, the biggest thing, you don't want another man seeing you at Victoria's Secret with your woman, right?
There's nothing more awkward. Nothing. I can't. Well, I'm sure there's something, but nothing more awkward.
I can think of a few things. I mean, I'm very embarrassing when I go in stores like that. I'll grab the bra and put it on and kind of see if it matches my eyes.
I would say it does. I mean, speaking of matching, I mean, we're wearing the same t-shirt today, the exact same t-shirt. We were talking about this earlier.
Yeah, I'm definitely liking that, brother.
Yeah, we've all got the shopping that we want to do and the shopping that we would prefer not to do. It's a lot like success and like failure. When you get the results that you were hoping for, we call it success. When you get the results that you were not hoping for, we call it failure. You still got results in the moment, but the story that we tell ourselves about what it is determines if it's success or failure. Same way with shopping. Where's it? It's both shopping. We're both doing shopping. You're spending money on the stuff, but depends on if it was success or failure, if it was the shopping that you wanted to do or the shopping that they wanted to do.
Right. I love that you said that, the whole success failure thing. You know, what people don't understand is that those failures are there to help you learn how to be successful. And I learned through building companies, you know, like, you know, taking those steps. And I've rushed, like when I first started my personal training company, I failed at it miserably and couldn't figure out why. Right. Then I realized I was skipping steps. It's like going to the store with your lady. Sometimes you skip steps. Sometimes it's beneficial that you're walking through the aisles with her because she's bringing you along because she wants your opinion, right? She wants to see your reaction about what she's about to get for you. She's not really getting it for herself. She wants to look good for you. And so you have to look at that. Like if my woman, and a lot of men need to take notes on this. A lot of women want to be complimented. So if you don't compliment your woman, you know, as much as she feels that you should be, you know, she would do things to get a compliment out of you without actually saying anything. It's the same thing with success and failure. You're going to try all of these different things. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? You know what I'm saying? Because that's how you figure it out. And you're going to fail. You're going to fail 1,000 times more than what you even expected to. Okay, that's the whole going through the store and being annoyed about, you know, looking at all these clothes because you don't want to be there. It's the same thing. Eventually, you get it right. Right. And now you have to look at all these failures and go, at least I learned. I took a little bit pieces of each and every last one of those failures in order to get right here. Mm-hmm. So next time you go to the store with your woman, you're actually looking at the clothes with her and going, hey, those jeans over there, I think would look really good on you. She's looking for that. Or, hey, babe, that shirt right there, go try that on. I want to see you in there. She wants you to be interested. Right. And that's the whole success part.
Well, see, you know, we told the one side for the guys, right? Ladies, same thing applies. Same rules apply for chores around the house. If we do something like take the trash out or whatever, especially unasked, the compliment, the thing that you're searching for in the store, we're searching for it, chores at home. The compliment would encourage us to do it a lot more.
And there we have a success.
There we have success.
There we have success, right? Because now we have a better understanding about what we're looking for. And you know, even though that we're men, you have to understand we've gone through our fair share. And women, some may agree with this, and some may not, and that's fine too. You know, they may have a little something extra to add to it. Well, what about this? You know what? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And we have to be more self-aware and mindful of each other, you know, and realize that, you know, like sometimes things aren't what you're making it out to be, right? There's a huge misunderstanding. But again, you know, I love to dive deeper into all of these things because I look at things on a wider platform, right? And I always look at things and go, okay, I see what's going on here. Why is this person this way and why is that person that way? Because again, it's the actions that's leading up to what you're doing, right? We just don't develop these habits out of the blue. We pick these habits up from other people. And what we realize is that the people that we're around the most, those are the habits that we imitate the most. They are not even yours. What are your habits, right? And maybe this relationship and the whole understanding would be a lot better if we understood what your habits was and not this person's. And so that's just becoming more authentic, learning how to communicate better, right? And going, okay, but you have to be self-aware too. Just like what we were talking about in relationship, you have to be more self-aware. Maybe there's something, you know, maybe you have to read in between the lines, which I wish we didn't have to do that all the time, but we do. It's the failures that lead to the success. You know, it's the building blocks, having a solid foundation to be able to, prime example, I have a friend of mine, they've been married now for over 12 years. You know, I know nothing about having a 12-year relationship. Most of my relationships end within the first year. And I'm going, okay, back to the drawing board again, you know. That's me, man. You know, I had all those failures, but it was a journey of learning myself. And I think when you have two individuals, a male and a female, that know themselves, it makes it easier to communicate what you don't like and what you do, you know.
Yeah, if you don't know yourself, but I love how you said those failures and not that you are a failure. It's a very important distinction. Not getting the results that you want in a particular activity, whether it's a relationship, job, business, whatever, not getting the results that you had hoped for is not the same as you personally being a failure. It's very important to understand that distinction. When the things that we do and the things that we create, and you look at something like the podcast that we're on right now, if you look at, you know, the rankings, you could say, wow, your show is a success. If you take my download numbers and compare it to another industry, like right now, what is the big one? Like murder mystery shows or whatever, like behind the scenes on murder. Like our numbers are not comparable. It's the apples and oranges thing. What's the joke? Is four followers a lot? Well, not on social media. In an alley, absolutely. Four followers is a lot. That's scary. Right. Social media is not a lot. You can't compare the two numbers. You can't compare the two things. But if you are onboarding that as your personal identity, like I failed, therefore I am a failure, that's where the trouble starts being. And if you don't know who you are, the image that you were created, the image of God, knowing who you are, that you're his masterpiece, that you really understand your personal value, your self-worth, you're going to find yourselves in situations with other people that also don't value you. And when you talk about all these learning experiences, the universe has a way of teaching us lessons. They will give you an opportunity to learn the lesson. And if you learn the lesson, it really doesn't ever happen again. If you didn't learn the lesson, you're going to get opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to learn that lesson. What might that look like? That might look like relationships. You talked a little bit about your struggles in relationship. Women are like, why am I always attracting jerks? Well, you were in the situation one time. You had the opportunity to learn the lesson. You didn't learn the lesson. So here you are again with another jerk learning the lesson. And until you understand your role in that, it's going to keep happening until you learn the lesson and change the way that you behave and interact with the world.
Now, let's break that down a little bit, right? Because we're creatures of habit. We go through these lessons and everything, but they're taught. They're somehow taught, and the lessons are there to take away and rebuild you, right? And the problem is that we love to hold on to things that are comfortable, things that protect us, things that we don't have to explain to no one else. Now, whether or not they're good things or bad things, you still hold on to them. And over time, they become habitual. So we talk about, you know, I talk about the relationships I've been in, right? I've been with narcissists. I've been with the bad girls. You know, I've been with the girls that want to fight you. I've always had what I wanted, but never had what I needed. I'm a creature of habit, or I used to be a creature of habit. And that's where all those lessons come from. I chose girls that suited me at that point in time in my life. I didn't choose the female that was going to be with me long term. I chose the one that I knew that was going to try to hurt me, right? Where did we learn these things from? We learned them from people that we love. I learned that from my mother. You know, believe it or not, well, that was one of the lessons that came about this. It was like, where did I get there? Why am I choosing the same females over and over again? Well, okay, let's look back. Who was the first female to ever show me love? Which was my mom, right? So my mom, God bless her soul, she was very direct. Like she didn't hold nothing back. So I love that in a woman. Be direct with me. Tell me what's on your mind. Talk to me, you know, in plain English. I don't want to have to decipher. Tell me what's, if you want a hug, say, hey, give me a hug. Mm. You know, okay, let's do it. But I learned that. And I learned how to protect myself from my mother as well. So let's think about the creature of habit. My mom used to beat me 6-7 times out of the day ever since I was a little kid. At that time, I didn't know that was abuse. So now being a man growing up and getting into females, I'm looking for the female that's going to try to hurt me so I can protect myself. Because in my mind, I was telling my mom, aha, you're not going to hurt me anymore. So I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me. I'm just going to do it in a way that it's going to leave a scar. Now, good or bad, I did it. And it was very destructive, creature of habit. Now that I'm older, now here I am, this man, and I'm going back going, well, these things didn't work. And how many times did I have to knock my head on the wood before it actually made sense, right? I'm hard-headed. I'm a slow learner when it comes down to things like that. Fast in other areas, slow in some. And so just building that up and looking at it and going, okay, why do I keep choosing these type of women? Because I learned that from my mother. She was the first person. She was my first love. You know, that's a boy's first love is his mother. Whether if you're adopted and got adopted to the family, your first love will always be your mother, because that's the one that's going to show you comfort. She's going to, regardless of what happens, she's going to be there to make sure that you're well. So now let's look at the habits that we develop as we get older. Men, we're crybabies when we're sick, right? Let's be honest, man.
Man cold is the worst disease out there. COVID, right? It's got nothing on the man cold. Of course, I'm joking here. But
why do we choose women that we know that's going to take care of us? Because when a woman gets sick, we don't do that. You're on your own. I'll get you a hot towel and a bucket by the bed. Call me if you need something, but I'm not going to sit in a room with you at all. And don't come downstairs or don't, you know, stay in a room where you're fine. You know, you'll be all right. But men, we're totally opposite when it comes down to that. That whole masculine thing goes right on out the window. We're crybabies. You know, but we're creatures of habits because who taught us that? Our mothers. When you're sick, I'm going to take care of you. Who taught the females? When you're sick, it's your job to take care of everyone else. No one's going to take care of you. There's a huge communication gap right there, right? About what we learn as we start to develop into our own personal selves, our authentic selves, the people that God created us to be. When we was talking earlier, I told you, like, sometimes we don't want to let go those comfort, those things that bring us comfort or security. And I told myself, I said, well, what if I let that go? What's on the other side? I had to stop being the kid that was protective over myself, you know, and I had to learn how to be open and let people in, which I still struggle with that from time to time. But I also had to be open-minded to the fact of maybe it's not you, maybe it's me, right? That whole little phrase right there. It was like, maybe it's not you, maybe it's me. So the hardest part about it is admitting that. The second hardest part about it is being alone with yourself so you can find who you are. You can discover who you are in those lonely times, right? Because there's nobody there to tell you whether what you're doing is right or wrong. You have to figure it out. And that's tapping into everything that's going on, right? All of these beautiful things, all the tragic, crazy stuff that goes on in the world. Who are you? Who are you in this world? Who did God create you to be? And when I finally found the answer, I was like, God created me to be a good man. And he's given me a gift. what does that gift look like? Oh, wow, this is what it looks like. So it's a lot of soul searching. It's a lot of being more self-aware, mindful of other people, because once you're self-aware of yourself and you start to look at things of, I wouldn't want someone to do this to me. Why would I do it to someone else? Right. So the way that you treat people becomes different unless you are a jerk, right? Then you go to treat people like you're a jerk, right? Because you want people to treat you the same way. Problem is that when people treat you the same way, it becomes a conflict. We have to figure this out. We definitely have to figure it out.
Oh, absolutely. And I love everything that we're saying. If you're listening to this and you love this too, reach out to Tony, Memories of Us podcast, and figure out what these real conversations and what it looks like to be a man. We had Dr. Trinace Richardson on the show, I think last year sometime, and she has women's circles dealing with this exact same thing for ladies. If you're a lady, please go check that out. Connect with Trinace Richardson and check out Sister Circles. If you're a guy and you're interested in this and you want to get more into these conversations, check out the Memories of Us podcast or you don't have to do one or the other. You can do both and check out Tony and Memories of Us. What's the website, Tony? Where can people find you?
It's www.memories2.org. And that just, we're about to revamp it. And so make it a little bit more transparent so you can see what we do, you know? So we want to make sure that the communities know exactly what we're offering, the services and how everything is put together. Come September, we will be relaunching the groups, which is going to be bigger and better than ever. We're doing the membership process. So this, you have access to guest speakers. And we do these groups free every Saturday. Once we start back up in September, September 18th, as a matter of fact, to give people time to get acclimated to the kids going back to school, and give men, you know, make sure that men have time and be able to hold space with each other without being, you know, having to worry about this, that, and other. And so we do that we will be doing that every Saturday come September 18th, along with other support groups that we will have going on. We will have the men's mental health, which will be Memories of Us, men's mental health. We will have the men's suicide support groups. We will have the men's recovery support groups. And my favorite, I'm working with some veterans right now. We're going to be bringing in a veteran support group, because there's nothing more humble or honoring to be able to help someone who helped me have my freedom, right? Even though I'm not a vet myself, it doesn't seem right to leave them out. You know, and I know there's other organizations out there. I just wanted to do a little small part to kind of help, you know. I'm tired of seeing veterans suffer, man. I really am. But I'm tired of seeing men suffer in those different areas as well. So be on the lookout for those. We will be launching season 3 of the podcast, the Memories of Us podcast, and you can catch it on all your streaming platforms as well as YouTube if you want to see who we're talking to and be a part of the conversations. And it's so, just fair warning, some of them can touch your heart. And I've had replies from men come back and go, man, just describe me. And I talked to them on the phone, they bawling their eyes out. And I'm going, I'm here, man, you know, but yeah, I'm here. So if you're interested in that, please, by all means, and don't forget to check out Travis's podcast, The Architect, the Nonprofit Architect. This man is awesome. And I can tell you right now, you know, I've been having a blast sitting up here talking with him. It's like we could just talk forever, man. So don't forget to check out him.
Hey, thanks so much for being on the show today, Tony. Getting these in-depth conversations, we talked a little bit about grief. We talked about how men process feelings and emotion. We talked a little bit about communication. All very, very, very important topics and discussions, especially when we get into the nonprofit world and how those interact with either the services that we provide or the people we provide the services to, including the staff and how we interact. All of these is such a great conversation. Thank you so much for being a guest today, Tony. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on. It's been an honor, my friend.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.